Hi, Phil from Freedom here. Just a quick note before we start the episode. We hope you're enjoying the Freedom Matters podcast as much as we are enjoying making it. And I'd like to ask you a favor. Please subscribe to the podcast, share it with your friends and family and colleagues, and give it a rating and a review on your favorite podcast platform. It all helps us to get the word out and to share these wonderful episodes with more people. And we'd love to hear from you. If you have feedback or suggestions, just drop us an email at podcast@freedom.to. Thank you.
I think that the theory of relativity in general as it relates to technology is something that we're going to constantly see evolve. The most challenging thing about the past year is just seeing how technology moves so quickly that it almost makes our life move faster too. It's really easy to lose a sense of time, lose a sense of identity, and also just a sense of your general well-being.
Welcome to Freedom Matters, where we explore the intersection of technology, productivity, and digital well-being. I'm your host, Georgie Powell, and each week I'll be talking to experts in productivity and digital wellness. I'll be asking them three questions to get to the heart of what productivity means to them. This week, I'm in conversation with Larissa May, whose mission is to empower the youth to engage in technology with intention. She's been coined as a digital wellness activist by Time, Forbes, Good Morning America, and CNN. Her global not-for-profit, Half the Story, began when, as a student, she was working as a successful online fashion blogger. Behind her perfectly curated Instagram feed, however, was a different story. 17-hour workdays, debilitating anxiety, and sleep deprivation. She realised that her online life was only half the story. And she wanted to highlight our most human attributes on social media to reignite the true human connection that is often lacking in the digital space. Today we'll be talking more about that journey, the difference between connections and being connected, and the dangers of commercialising mental health. So the first thing I need to do is to say, Lars, thank you so much for joining us on Freedom Matters and spending the time in your busy life. I know it's very busy right now to speak with us. We're really, really grateful.
Thank you for having me. I love freedom and, you know, it's so important to have tools and friends in the digital wellness world because we're all in it together and we all have the bigger picture in mind, which is to make a difference. And I think that's what's beautiful.
Lars is only in her mid-20s. And yet, in just a few years, she's managed to build a global movement, drawing awareness to the impact of social media on the lives of young people. To kick off the conversation, I wanted to better understand her personal journey and what led her, in the first instance, to create Half the Story.
I think I'll start by saying I've been totally humbled throughout this entire process. I started Half the Story 5 years ago out of my college dorm room, really at my rock bottom in my life. I think, you know, the brightest stories and the brightest lights and hopefully the best things in the world usually come from a place of pain. And so for anyone that's listening to this right now, if you're suffering from debilitating anxiety or depression, I think just know that by getting the support that you need, you can really walk through this moment and the future can be brighter, but you have to prioritize your mental health. For me, I remember the moment so vividly. I was in college. I was incredibly, incredibly depressed alongside running a fashion blog and a business out of my dorm room at school and traveling to New York. And everything looked great on social media. I was coming to Fashion Week. I was working with brands. I was, you know, shooting outside the library, doing all sorts of weird things on my college campus. But I was really, really struggling behind the screen and I was struggling inside. And, you know, I was struggling with suicidal ideation. I was struggling with an eating disorder. I lost my best friend who was my roommate because she couldn't deal with me anymore. I was sleeping across from an empty bed and just, I remember hearing voices partying down the hallways and just being alone. And really the closest thing to me was my cell phone. And it was the way that It was my shield. It was the shield between me and the world. And it was a way to protect myself in terms of my identity. And it was also this weapon because I was using social media as a way to cope with my depression. And I wasn't getting the support that I needed until my RA knocked on the door and dragged me to the psychological center at school. And that was my rock bottom moment. I had lost everything. And I had to shut down my fashion blog and I had to reimagine my whole life and my identity. And I realized through that period, I sat and I watched how young people's body language literally shifted with cell phones. Young people sitting in the dining hall, not looking at each other, even really connecting, but just being on their phones. And I realized I had experienced the immense power of social media by building a career at a young age. But I also experienced the immense pain and the amplification of my mental illness and how it was impacting me. And so I decided to put my blog to rest and be a part of the solution because we talk about nutrition, we talk about fitness, we have PE for kids in schools, we have sex education, but we put phones in front of them and expect that they're going to know what to do with them. And what we've seen really since the iPhone was created is that the rates of anxiety and depression of young people have pretty much varied directly. And obviously the pandemic has created a pandemic of isolation and loneliness, but with the right tools, we can empower the next generation's relationship with technology. And that's why half the story exists. It started with $250 and me sharing my story on my college campus with stickers to now being a global nonprofit with a mission to really revolutionize the way that we educate young people so that they can grow up with technology and have a healthier relationship with it.
Oh my God, it's absolutely incredible. It's so real. I can just feel you on that journey and I've got so many questions. But one thing I wanted to pick up on straight away was this comment that you made about how your use of technology or social media was amplifying your mental health problem. So can you talk to me a little bit more about that and how you see the relationship between technology and how you were feeling?
That's a great question. But I think one of the biggest problems sort of in this digital wellness movement is that we say, you know, screens are the cause of this. For me, I think it's not really as black and white as that. I think you have to ask the question of why. If you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs and things that we need to be humans, our phones have become the center of our life. If we look at the EQ of the next generation, it's lower than any generation in history. And the real problem is that we spend more time with our phones than we do our loved ones and our own thoughts. We're not making the space to truly connect with ourselves. And we've learned that for young people, screens have become a coping mechanism. Yes, it is a tool. Yes, we've relied on it for the past year, but it has become the shield and it's paralyzed young people in that they can talk about mental health online maybe, but they have a really hard time facing it in the real world with their family and their friends. The best way to describe it is there's a difference between connection and connecting. And until we truly understand the difference between those things, we're gonna struggle with this mental health and this mental illness pandemic. Right now, we're doing some research on this, is what is the role and how does screen time play a role in your social factors? How does it play a role in your psychological factors, your mood? And also, how does it play a role in your biological factors? So your sleep, what you're eating, and your physical exercise. You can't look at mental health just as mental health. You have to look at the full picture. And the same goes to digital wellness. And what we've seen is just screens are getting in the way of fitness. They're getting in the way of developing an identity, even though in some ways they're also helping young people form them. It's like this push and this pull. We just need to have more space for our own thoughts and our lives. Because humans have just evolved and in so many ways. And the scary part is that technology is moving faster than our minds, but our minds are trying to keep up with it. And I think as a result, we're really starting to see the implications of that.
One thing was clear to me. Lars was making a clear distinction between connection and connecting. And whilst our connections are increasing exponentially, the space that we need to deeply connect with others, but also with ourselves, is evaporating.
Anecdotally, and certainly when you hear about personal experiences like Lars's, it seems social media has a large part to play in the distortion of what connection means today. But what about the research? We've heard from other guests like Jocelyn Brewer on the limits of some studies. Conflicting papers published in Nature are a good example. Whilst Amy Auburn and Andrew Babilski have positioned screen time as akin to potatoes when the impact on young people is assessed, Twenge et al. Consider heavy social media usage in teenage girls to be more harmful to mental health than heroin. From Lars's perspective, what is the truth? How is technology impacting the mental health of Gen Z?
The success of media is not necessarily about the truth. We know that false information travels 100 times faster than truth, and the way that the media is incentivized is through how far something travels. And so when you're looking at research, I think it's important for everyone to know that not all data is necessarily statistically relevant. And there are so many internal and external factors that can contribute to a data set. A small set of data versus a large set of data is vastly different in terms of when you're making conclusions. And I think when you think about studies, for me, I look more at the methodology than I do at the news article and what it's telling me, to be completely honest with you, because people are grabbing for clickbait. I'm actually on an advisory board for the Digital Wellness Lab, which is part of the Boston Children's Hospital. And one of the doctors there was one of the first mediaologists, and he was coined as that term, and they're doing some of the best research in this space. And, you know, I think in the future, we need to make sure that the people that are doing the research and telling the story are non-biased and that it's not coming from the tech companies, because there is a lot of research out there that these companies are doing in some ways as PR stunts and to save face. And so I guess the longer answer to that is that you should never take anything at face value on social media. Go research, look at a bunch of studies. And at the end of the day, social media is only one part of this bigger story. But yeah, certainly it has an impact. And certainly it has an emotional impact on mood and the way that you feel in young people. What we've seen even from our young people is that, look, America versus India. We just had a conversation on this morning. We had one of our partnering organizations in India come on our Instagram Live and speak live on the ground there about what's happening and sort of the state of mental health and stigma and what's going on. And in America, we're rather progressive, and we have to remember that. Even though we're facing something that's so challenging, the positive news is that Gen Zs are more willing to talk about their mental health than any other generation, which also could be a reason for why we're seeing an increase in the amount of people getting support. I would say pre-pandemic, everyone's been pretty much plagued with mental health struggles during this time. And the future is bright, but there's just a lot of disparity, just like everything in education and access to healthy food. There's disparity in technology use. A lot of families that are underprivileged, some parents use technology as babysitters because that's their only option. And I think we just have to always remember that everyone is coming to this conversation from a different perspective and a different amount of resources, but we're living in a world where tech isn't going to go anywhere. So we need to teach kids how to live with it rather than without it, which has really been the center of our approach for social media U.
So what does Half the Story do to help teach these kids? And how does their new initiative, Social Media U, fit into the story?
Yeah, it's so funny because, and I say this to everyone, I did not start this when I was in college being like, I'm building a nonprofit that's going to help the next generation and transform mental health and technology. That was, you know, truly, humbly, not my intention at all. I was a young person that had a problem and wanted to solve it in a creative way and just started by sharing my story. And basically, that happened for about a year. And then I traveled around the United States and funded Half the Story through booking myself for speaking engagements at different colleges. And so I basically spent every single day doing this, interviewing young people around the world through different crises in Paris and Venezuela and Colombia, and just understanding the disparity in the mental health conversation, but also the resources. And there were a couple of things I learned. First and foremost, the resources that we have in the U.S. are not accessible globally. So crisis text line is not necessarily everywhere. And there's a lot of disparity in that access, specifically in South America and also Africa. The second thing I learned is that schools are adapting technology, but they don't know what to do with it. They don't know how to engage with it. They don't know how to make it a positive thing as opposed to a negative thing. And the third thing is that parents are completely out of the loop in terms of what their kids are learning in the school. And we sat back and realized, okay, there's a big problem. There's a big opportunity to create a sex ed for social media and mental health. But one of the other biggest challenges about the mental health space is that it hasn't been very data driven. I think there's some sort of statistic where if you think about all of the things that are happening in the medical space, the mental health epidemic, 1 in 5 people in the United States, they have a mental illness, yet it's the brain is the least likely thing to be looked at within the medical field. It's very rare that you have a neuroscientist or a psychiatrist that's doing a CAT scan unless you're going to have a brain tumor or you're having a severe neurological issue. And I started thinking about that a lot. And when I thought about our educational program, I was like, all right, well, we want to design something in partnership with young people and teens. And I want to take my background, which has been in, you know, building and scaling multi-million dollar direct-to-consumer brands, and apply that marketing approach to this nonprofit, because that's how you're going to get young people engaged. And the nonprofit space needs to be completely reinvented, from the grants process, which could tell you all about, to even just getting funded. Right? Like, it's not totally accessible. And we wanted to make something that was accessible and data-driven. Half the story we reinvented within the last 18 months when we became a nonprofit. And we have 3 key pillars, which is research, advocacy, and education. So we're conducting research as a part of this educational program. So any school that gets social media you, there's 3 components. One, there's the actual educational materials for the school and the students. The second is that we have a parallel path program for parents. And then the third thing that we have is, and this is an optional tool, but we've developed an app in partnership with our friends at Maslow AI, which all the students can download. The whole purpose of that, you know, in social media U, is that it's basically choosing to opt into a research study. And throughout the course, they can measure their screen time, their mood, their sleep through AI by speaking, by journaling. But if you look at the traditional psychiatric scales, like PHQ-9, it was built for the medical space to get a very specific answer. And so when we start thinking about research in the mental health space, emotions are not linear. And so we are really trying to expand that so that when we go into these schools and these districts, we're not only teaching kids about the science of tech in your brain, neuroplasticity, how to develop new habits, how to hack your phone, but we're also able to get anonymous research from students that want to participate so that we can give a quantitative perspective and look at where the students are mentally within that school district or within that place. Mm-hmm. And it's really important to do that because it's a strong case for more mental health funding. It's a strong case for more screen-free spaces for play and creativity within schools and institutions. I have a dream to have screen-free recess be something that is mandated, if possible, in the United States. These kids, they want to connect with each other, but they quite literally don't know how to say no to their phones because it's so much easier than pushing themselves to just have a real conversation in the real world. Screen time is just the beginning of the conversation. It's the easy way into the harder conversations about depression, about loss, about all of the different things that young people are facing, and also the things that parents are having a hard time striking the conversation about.
In behavior change studies, the impact of relativity, understanding how you perform relative to both your own goals, but also the behavior of others, has a large impact on our subsequent behavior. How was social media you taking this into consideration when thinking about their large-scale mental health support?
Right now, we just piloted the program, so we're constantly making new iterations to the app. So we will be doing that for any student that reports below average in mood. We will be directing them to localized resources for their support, because that's a really important part of this as well. We're hoping to make all of this open source down the road and continue to build a larger research institution so that we can bridge, make education much more quantifiable yet accessible. I think that's what we've learned the most about even just education and history within the past couple of years, is that we need to constantly be challenging ourselves and rewriting the curriculum and the rules based on what the needs are of young people, but also based on what's really happening in the world. The thing about technology is that it's challenging our own thoughts and our own perceptions and our own sense of what reality is. I think that the theory of relativity in general as it relates to technology is something that we're going to constantly see evolve. The most challenging thing about the past year is just seeing how technology moves so quickly that it almost makes our life move faster too. It's really easy to lose a sense of time, lose a sense of identity, and also just a sense of your general well-being.
The mental health industry is booming, and Larissa is conscious of the commercialization of the mental health space and the role that Half the Story plays within it. She took some time to explain this further to me.
We also have a digital advocacy training program because right now, you know, we've seen, even you all, I'm sure, have seen this. 5 years ago, I was afraid to talk about depression on social media, and I did it. Now we're living in a world where the self-care $4 billion business of 5 years ago has now become the mental health movement. And my concern is that mental health is becoming a commercialized entity, and we have to be incredibly, incredibly careful about the way that we speak about it. And so part of Half the Story's job is to preserve that integrity for creators and to train young people, which we do in Social Media U, but we also have a group of young people that we offer free therapy to, young teens, that we've trained to talk about their own stories and coping mechanisms. You'll probably see some of those videos on Half the Story, in addition to therapists, so that we can be advocating in a way that's safely and responsibly. And I think that's something that I want everyone to really think about. The way that we advocate on social media can really impact other people's mental health, even through microaggressions, not using the right pronouns, not using inclusive emojis, but also just using even mental illness as an adjective. That is a microaggression for someone that is struggling from a mental illness on a daily basis. And I just hope that our society and our culture and big brands, as they create awareness, that they're also creating the right tools internally. We're no longer in a world where we can sit back and just take things at face value, because we all know it's only half the story, and we don't need to call people out. We just need to call them in and educate them. And I think we'll be in a happier world.
Amazing, Lars. You've been an absolutely amazing guest. I would love to steal a day of your time to talk, but I know you're very busy, so I'm going to let you get on. But thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. We really appreciate having you with us.
I'm so grateful for this opportunity, and I love Freedom and what you all are doing, and I'm excited to continue building this better digital world together.
Thank you for joining us on Freedom Matters. If you like what you hear, then subscribe on your favorite platform. And until next time, we wish you happy, healthy, and productive days.